Okay, thank you all for coming by. Good to see each and every one of you. Welcome to the September meeting. It seems like we just met, and we are meeting again. The meeting will be a little different from what was originally told at the August meeting. Thomas Jefferson University scheduled an enterprise retreat for today, so most of the senior administration is over there. There won't be a chancellor's report today. We were not invited, no. That's right. We're the better groups here. That's how I'm thinking of it. Mark Tykachinski had originally talked about presenting today. He will not be presenting either. What the schedule that for later on in the semester. So the agenda is a little bit abbreviated. We'll stretch it out to make sure we get the full 2 hours in as before. Any questions or comments on the agenda? Motion to approve. Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Terrific. Thank you. Minutes were distributed. Any comments, questions, changes, revision to the minutes? Okay. Minutes will go in the permanent record. Faculty voices. Nancy Howard talking about textbooks.
First of all, I want to start by thanking all of you who are actively participating in not just the surveys, but the flags that are raised, the kudos that are raised throughout the semester. Some of you are involved as academic advisors who are chasing down students, trying to meet with them. And some of us get copies of all of the flags. And so we're hovering at 5,000 feet looking at the overall traffic. But in that role as advising advocate for DEC, I begin to see patterns that may not be apparent to an advisor who advises 25 students or 35 students or whatever your load is. And the one that's come to my attention repeatedly, but this semester seems to be more than any other semester, and that is the number of students who are missing class or are not participating or haven't done a reading, you know, all of those same old excuses. But when the advisor actually takes time to talk to these students, they find that they can't afford the textbook, or they don't have a copy of the packet of reading, or they have to drop a class, a studio class, because they can't afford the supplies. And this is becoming more and more frequent. I see people nodding their heads around the room. And I think as a faculty, we need to recognize the overall cost of not only the supplies, but the cost of the textbooks, the online math programs that have to be purchased by the students, whatever, in order as we build those into our classes. And perhaps come up with some solutions. They may not be ideal. For example, I always make sure my textbooks have a copy on reserve in the library. Again, not ideal, it's not the most convenient, they have to come on campus to use it, but at least they can have access to it. Requiring everybody to have their own copy as opposed to what used to happen in the past, some students would pool together and share a textbook or something. But I think we need to be sensitive to the fact that this is a retention issue. We have people who are dropping classes because they are either getting poor grades, they're not participating, etc. And in some cases, this is well beyond their control. And I know books, room, board, tuition, etc. is all part of the package. But as we get different populations in, we find that that population is becoming needier. And I think we need to address it.
Ed Santilli, physics.
Do you mind if I solve this problem? Really? There's for the sciences I know and some other fields, there are free textbooks available online from OpenStax, OpenStax.com. I'm using that currently for Physics 101. They are pretty deep, well, the physics books are pretty decent actually. They are very high quality. They're made by Rice University with grant money, And there's a couple of nice things about it. First of all, like I said, it's totally free. They have it wherever they have the internet connection, or they can download it and have it anywhere they want. The other nice thing is there are various resources for them to get help if they need it and for some reason don't want to go to our Academic Success Center. Can't imagine why. I'm serious, I meant that. And also, if you're a teacher who likes doing electronic homework submissions, there are really cheap resources for that as well. I'm talking like $30, and you have the equivalent of mastering chemistry or mastering physics. Maybe with a less shiny interface, but $30, and they didn't pay for the textbook. The other nice thing about that is, if you want supplemental material, we now are using Sean's outline. Sean's outline's full of problems. So that could be your, and that's $10. So now they spend $10 on my class, which is really great. And this, there is a lot of classes, a lot of books for a lot of classes online. I really suggest you look this up.
Alright, don't judge. Hi everyone, MB Carilko, I'm the Director of Online Programs, and I'm so glad it said that for a number of reasons. OpenStax is just one of the many resources that fall under OER, which is Open Education Resources, also known as Open Education Pedagogy. And these are more than just links, like free links on a site. These are curated, peer-reviewed, well-vetted by scholars in the field resources. The publishers, of course, are losing money now. I'll give you a moment to bow your head in sympathy for the publishers. You know, they've sort of put people into this sort of locked situation with these access codes and these materials. It's not to say the materials aren't good and useful, perhaps. I'm talking about things like Mastery, as you mentioned. In the online majors, we have 9 undergraduate online majors, and of course, cost, obviously, a big thing. Nancy's totally right, it is a retention issue. So what we've done this past year, I actually presented on this OER at the Online Learning Conference in Florida last year. It's a big movement that's known very well in the K-12 industry. It's not so much in higher ed, but I'm working on that. So what we've done, I worked with 2 full-time faculty members here, Kay McGee, I don't see her here, or Chris Pastor, I know he's perhaps still away, on their courses, and I said to them, I will give you X dollars if you can incorporate OER into your next course revision. Kay McGee teaches college algebra for us online, and she had been using a product called ThinkWell. Nini knows it, right? So it's like $120, $130, and you can't buy that used, and you can't share it. Well, I guess you could share it. Well, now they make it really hard to share it with, you know, sharing passwords. We certainly don't want to encourage that type of thing. But in any case, so I worked with Kay, and she converted it to My Open Math, and that is probably too, Ed, what you were talking about, the $30 thing. In this case, My Open Math has no cost, and Kay reports that her class is already going more easily for students, because you can't learn from materials you don't have. And you might have heard the saying, first day of class materials, like ready first day, you don't have to wait, I don't have money, I gotta wait till I get paid to buy mastering. And these are high quality learning objects, right? Now, I won't lie to you, there's, time to do it. It's easy to say, oh, just buy the textbook or whatever. But so all of this to say, oh, Chris Pastor was the other one with his statics course. He used materials from Carnegie Mellon, which was one of the founding organizations. Well, actually, MIT was the founding with OpenCourseWare. Carnegie Mellon has a ton of, I think we would all agree, pretty high-quality learning objects there, too. That's everything from textbooks to quizzes to activities, etc. So I would encourage you to think about it. I'm here to help you, even if you're teaching on ground and you have really no sort of online component. I'm not restricted to just, our online programs. I have a website, it's my own personal website, girlmeetsweb.com, and I have a ton of resources listed on that, OER. So go and take a look, OpenStax is there, all kinds of other information. Some of you might know Merlot, if you've heard of Merlot, not the wine. It's a site as well that's all full of very scholarly materials. So there's lots of help for you, and we're here to do it, so I'd encourage you to take a look at your class and see if you can do that. Thank you.
Other comments? We are not having a report from the provost office, as far as I know. Matt is at that executive retreat that I had talked about. He had talked about possibly coming back here, but I don't think he's going to be here. So in lieu of that, if you have any questions you'd like directed to the provost office, you can raise them now, and we will get answers back for you.
They know this is coming. When are we getting an organizational chart?
That's what they're working on at the enterprise.
Duly noted. Okay, we'll work on getting that. Thank you. Okay, terrific. The updates of the Senate Committee. Oh, me. Yeah. Back to the Council. We have run the fall elections. We have received people to fill all of those committee slots. Thanks to all of those that volunteered to run. Thanks to all of you for voting. We had a very nice turnout on this election. So at the moment, all committees are fully staffed. Committee chairs, if you run into problems, just let me know and we'll adjust as needed. Valerie Henson, revision to the Hallmarks distinction in global perspectives.
Hi, everybody. It's Valerie Henson from CSLA, here as the chair of the East Falls Campus AOO committee. And as you all know from having memorized your AOO open reviews when I send them out, the September 4th through September 14th included a trans-college revision to the Global Perspectives Hallmarks distinction. And under our current system, all trans-college programs come to the full faculty for a vote. So at the AOO meeting this past Thursday, the AOO as a group determined that the changes to this trans-college global distinction, which you probably also determined when you read it, were pretty minor. They're not significant overhauls or revisions. And we also noted that the AOO Policy and Procedures Manual doesn't distinguish between a process for minor or insignificant revisions to trans-college things and major revisions. I think just because when we put this together, we weren't really thinking revisions, we were thinking new programs. After talking this through, we also noted that at the college levels, minor and insignificant changes don't really need a faculty vote from the full college. So we decided to be consistent about this, that we would change the manual, Policies and Procedures Manual, which I know is an exciting bit of news for you all, but just I wanted to kind of bring that to you and say that we will revise that so that you don't have to go through the trouble of voting on very insignificant changes to trans college programs. Of course, all trans college items still, no matter how minor, will still be communicated to the full faculty through the open review as we did. Of course, we'll collect any comments from anyone about them through the AOO open review process and air them at the AOO meeting. So please know that your voice, your comments so far have been heard. And if you would still like to have comments if you'd like to revisit the distinction changes, please go ahead and do that. And if you have any comments about that, please email Raju Parikal and me with those comments. And this will be heard at the next AOO meeting on September 28th. All right? Any immediate questions, comments? Okay. Thank you.
Good. Thank you so much. All right, we have two special reports. You might recall at the August meeting I presented the results of the administrative survey, and those of us on faculty council were a little surprised at the number of faculty that said, I don't know what these people do. So we're having a series of three special reports, one each over the next 3 months. The first one will be by Megan Mills. It's an overview of the Academic Success Center and the services they provide our students.
Hi everyone, thank you for having us. Thank you for the faculty who did participate in the survey. We had asked John to have the Academic Success Center as part of the survey so that we had a clear understanding of how you, the faculty, viewed the Academic Success Center with all the transitions that we have been going through in the past 2 to 3 years with staff as well as the needs for our students. Just to give you a little overview for some of you, you may not have remembered that the name had changed back in July of 2016 under Pat Thatcher was the Learning and Advising Center, and to become more current with the higher education world, we decided to transition the name over to reflect actually what the services provide in the Academic Success Center. We like to just give you an idea of who our staff is. Sarah will be speaking with you in a few minutes about the writing support that we have increased in the Academic Success Center, but you may recognize some of the names. You'll see two names at the bottom. Barry Friedman was hired last March, and it was interesting that the survey had spoken about time management and study skills, because we have been working collaboratively with the Office of Student Accessibility and the Provost's Office as we were seeing the demand come in from all of our populations of students who were struggling in this area. Barry joined the Academic Success Center last March part-time to work with our students. She has, in fact, worked with our students at the Atlantic City campus and the students here on this campus. She has been trained on Zoom, so her services are now available to our students at other campuses or the students in distance learning who wish to make an appointment with her. Her hours are available on Starfish. But just so you understand, she is here on campus Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 4 to 7 p.m. and is open to meeting with all students. So please, it's not just the traditional college student that she has been working with. I would encourage you, if you have not stopped over to the Academic Success Center, stop over. You can meet some of the new staff over there, as well as interact with them. You may have spoke with them over email as well. And then we will talk more about the ESL support with writing. Sophie joined us this year. She has replaced Elizabeth, who left us over the summer, and she is teaching our new international freshmen in the Intro to Textual Analysis course for the global section. So, as you may or may not know, the Academic Success Center is actually two components in one. We are the first-year advising center that provides support to all of our first-year students. Most of you have been a first-year advisor either prior to me coming here or throughout the time that I have been here, so I thank you for all of your service. What you'll see is we are drop-in, so any new student who arrives either over the summer or in January will come through the Academic Success Center. They will meet with a faculty advisor. They will monitor and track them throughout their first year and help transition them over in preparation for their upper level coursework, as well as review with them how they're doing in their classes, did they get any starfishes or kudos, so forth and so on. The mission here is to really help students become more educated and transition better to the university. As some of you know, when they do come here, it is a shock for them. They have not really been away from home, or they have not really had to address serious life-changing issues, and having to live on their own and make decisions. When we talk to them over the summer at orientation, the looks on their faces of reality setting in has begun, and their parents go through the same transition. So in some ways, we not only are transitioning the students, we are supporting the parents as well. As most of you know, some of them do require high touch, and we're happy to speak with any parent that does contact the university to help their students be successful. So as the advising process continues to evolve and our students' needs continue to increase, as you see it in the classroom, we also see it in the advising area, we do help them as they realize that this major may not be for them. And that is a hard realization as they have grown up thinking that they wanted to be in architecture. And then they realize that design is not for them, and where can we help support them? And that is what is great about having the faculty advisors with us, because they can communicate and talk to all of our students in any capacity. And to give you a snapshot, these are your lovely colleagues who join us every day during the week. We are forever grateful for all the support they do give the Academic Success Center. They do anywhere from 3 to 4 hours a week. They will refer to your students, follow up, and give your students an opportunity to come in and see them. Even though it is drop-in, they do at times have to see their own students one-on-one, especially if they are a transfer student. As previously mentioned at the August faculty meeting, the advising system here is going electronic in some capacity. So, for all of you that have the blue folders or the green folders or the red folders as we decide in the summer what color the new incoming students are going to have. We are currently in the process of piloting our student planning module that will replace WebAdvisor for our students. This is being piloted with the first year students and the transfers. Myself, Kelsey Gilbert, and Gina Mercanti will visit every single FYS section, and then Gina will visit, will hold a session for our transfer students. They will register through this, and they will be able to map their path to graduation so that it can help with course planning. For you as faculty and program directors who have to map out how and what courses you're going to be offered, eventually this will give you the capacity in the next couple semesters to be able to provide this. This will go live for all students within the next 12 to 18 months. We have to make sure we can get a solid reading to see the entire class register while the upper class are still registering through WebAdvisor. It has been a great tool. If you have any questions, myself, Kelsey, or Emily with OIR would be happy to speak with you. What the biggest transition is from the advising perspective is not only making sure the students are registering correctly and mapping out their path to graduation, but now this will be where you will store all of your advising notes, where your students will be able to see what courses they have coming. It will, in fact, mirror the check sheet. And in some cases, the check sheets will never go away. They will always be available. But eventually, this will be available to all of our students to be able to track their way to graduation. Does anyone have any questions about this? Okay. It's a pretty cool tool. I'm not going to lie. You probably could log on and take a look at it. I would discourage encouraging a lot of your upper-level students. Were not happy when we launched this because at orientation, they were like, why can't we have it? And we have to explain that we have to make sure it works from A to Z before we open it live to the entire school. To transition, we are also where all of the learning support happens here at the university in regards to tutoring and time management and study skills. This current semester, we have on staff to date two math tutors, one chemistry. This is professional tutors, okay, not peer tutoring. One chemistry, one professional tutor in design, one for viz and drawing, an ESL, two time management, and nine writing tutors. So we do have the support available with our professional student for our students who require professional support. We have currently 36 peer tutors tutoring in 73 subject areas, and that number is increasing daily. The demand that has been asked for this semester is actually at an all-time high. We may get close to breaking where our numbers were last year. You'll see we are offering and have increased supplemental instruction in all of these course areas. It has deemed to be a very successful process for our students in that we have seen success in retaining our students who have needed additional support, as well as having them be successful in your classes. To give you a snapshot, this was last year. What I highlighted here was the breakdown of the two semesters. You'll see at the end of in the fall, we saw a total of 3,100 tutoring appointments, which was an increase of 400 plus visits from the previous fall. In the spring, we saw 2,754 appointments, which was down from the previous spring, but that has always been the norm. There was also the transition from Erin Lucas departuring, where she ran a lot of writing workshops before the arrival of Sarah, as well as some of the requirements for some of the courses that are being phased out due to the changes in curriculum. So just so you have an idea, total we saw approximately 5,883 student appointments in one academic year in the Academic Success Center. Okay, and to give you an even clearer view, you'll see what the populations and where the areas were. 42% of it was in writing, 4% was in our graduate PA, ESL, professional math, and peer tutoring was as high as always. And then you'll see over, we also had 82% was in the traditional undergraduate, 2% in the CPS, 12% in the graduate area, and then 4% in the PA. So this is just a snapshot. We do tally, and our students do register through Starfish for tutoring appointments. as well as visit our website to have the schedule up every semester by the second week of classes, as long as the students who are doing the peer tutoring do not have to be, you know, replaced, because we did have a large number of students step away from their peer tutoring appointments this year due to study abroad and other commitments. And then this was what it looked like for spring. So again, you'll see 39% in the writing area, 12% in the peer tutoring, professional math, so forth and so on. And then I wanted to introduce Sarah Marshall. She joined us in April. She replaced Erin Lucas, who I know a lot of you have had a relationship with regarding the writing support. She's going to talk a little bit about how we have expanded our writing support for over the past couple months and at the start of the semester.
Thanks, Megan. So this semester, these are just some of the things that we've been doing for the undergraduate students. So I kind of broke it down by the different populations, so you can see whatever students you teach, what we're offering for them currently, and then talk about, you know, some new opportunities coming up. So far this semester, we visited 11 of the first year writing courses in order to promote the Writing Center, to let them know that all the, you know, as many first year students as possible, what, you know, writing tutoring entails. A lot of students have misconceptions about that, and to encourage them to make those appointments. And then also we are offering 9 writing workshops on specific aspects of academic writing in the month of September. Those are kind of general workshops. Anyone from any course can come. They are targeted towards undergrads, although grad students can also experience some benefits from those. Right now, today, we're having a drafting session going on, which is where students can come in and bring a project they're working on and have a tutor who can kind of help them as they're writing. And then, you know, Wednesday is integrating sources into their writing, and Thursday is organization and transition. So those are some of the kind of broad overview. We may offer recurrences of those workshops in October and November, depending on interest, either expressed from faculty or students for those workshops. So. So for graduate students, we have, and also for the Continuing Professional Studies program, as Megan mentioned, all of the writing tutors have been trained in using Zoom, which is an online video conferencing program, which is really fabulous for writing conferences because they can also share their screen with the tutors, so we can both see the exact same document. So it's a lot more beneficial than just doing Skype or over the phone or something like that. And then also the tutor can control the student's screen as well. They can both, so they can write comments in the margins, using text boxes, using track changes, and then all of that is saved on the student's desktop. So it's a really great program for doing distance tutoring, which is fabulous for people who work during the day, who can't come in Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. We also have facilitated some workshops for some of the graduate programs, the MS in Disaster Medicine Management, I and Teresa Edge in the librarian, and as well as some of the faculty in that program put together a 2-day workshop for that course to help them, you know, transition to writing at the graduate level. I held a writing workshop for the Applied Research Methods and the Doctor Management Strategic Leadership Program. 4 writing workshops will be held for the CSEM 300, which is Continuing Professional Studies. So as I'll talk about, I think, in the next slide, I'm going to go ahead. Yeah. Oh, actually, it'll be the one after that. So that's kind of the overview of some of the things we're offering, but we want to continue in expanding in those areas. So also international students is an aspect that we're trying to kind of increase our availability and support for those students. So as Megan mentioned, we have Soki, who's really great. She's TESOL certified and has a Master of Education in Language and Literacy. And so she's available. She's here on campus Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 10:30 until 3 p.m. And people can make appointments for her to work on writing. They can also work on reading, though, as well, and conversational English. She's offering a conversation group for international students, along with a peer tutor who has interest in that area, so that students can come in and work on improving their English fluency, both being able to process it, hearing it, and also being able to articulate it. And then also just, it's a little bit more fun, a little bit more casual than maybe a one-on-one appointment, so they can talk about cultural differences and how to kind of interpret some of the different social cues they're seeing happening to transition to a new environment. And so that's kind of for that. And then lastly is the new initiatives that we're working on this semester. So we are having more tutoring, writing tutoring hours available in the evening to also, again, better address the needs of working professionals or distance, you know, students who don't live quite as close as some of our undergrads. So up until 7 p.m. Monday through Thursday. Originally, it was only Tuesday through Thursday, and we've added in those Monday evening hours, which so far has been a pretty popular evening. Also, I'm holding professional development meetings. I put all the tutors into groups to try and continue processing the feedback I've gotten from several of the faculty about things, you know, good and maybe not so good as far as what they're perceiving, as far as the writing tutoring feedback, to continue the professional development, continue expanding their skills as tutors, and to kind of practice that collaboration and reflective tutoring. And then lastly, so I've mentioned several writing workshops that I've either held or will help. And some of you may be wondering, like, why did I get that for my course? Why is CSUN 300 getting all these writing workshops or things like that? So you do have the opportunity to request a workshop tailored to your course. I can only offer one workshop per course, though. So I have gotten some faculty, once they had that one writing workshop, I'm like, okay, let's do another one. And I'm like, okay, I'm only one person, so we can't do extensive, but I definitely want to be able to adapt. I think some of the, you know, broad writing workshops aren't always the best way to target the specific needs that you're seeing in your course. So I can work with you collaboratively to develop a writing workshop that will target the specific needs you're seeing in your course. But do just be aware, if you want an October workshop end of this week, I need to know by, so I have the time to put together, you know, good materials for that. And then for if you want one in November, no later than October 20th.
And just so everyone can keep a lookout in their mailboxes at the end of every month for the next month, we will send out an update as to what is going on in the Academic Success Center. We felt this was a good way to reach everyone so that they were aware of the services and what is coming up. It also goes to our students so that our students are aware of, you know, when is the last day to withdraw from a course? When does registration open for all of our students? As well as what workshops are coming up in the month of October. And we are going to highlight some of our graduating seniors who have either been office assistants or peer tutors with us throughout their time here at the university, as well as some of our faculty advisors and some of the staff, so you have an opportunity to become more familiar with who we are in the Academic Success Center. Again, we would love to have you visit with us. Feel free to stop over, give us a call. We are open Monday through Thursday for tutoring from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. I would encourage that if you have students who are not on campus but would like a distance learning appointment, they can schedule through Starfish for an appointment with Zoom up until 7 o'clock. Also, it is appointment-based from 5 until 7, so that students cannot just drop in because of the professional tutors, as well as the safety of who we are familiar with, who is coming into the building as the rest of the campus is closing down. And then first year advising is drop-in. It is Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. All of our students can just stop in and see. We will be shifting to getting ready for registration for the spring. Midterm grades will be posted. I cannot encourage you enough to please continue to use Starfish. Raise the flags, follow up with your students. They also love kudos just as much because it is a positive feedback to them. Even if they got a flag and they're doing better in their class, that can really go a long way with a lot of our students. Thank you so much. Does anyone have any questions? Okay.
All right, terrific. Thanks. Thank you. Next up is our second special report, Monique and Marie-Christine, giving us an overview of the Goals 2 program.
Good afternoon, everybody. Let's just get the PowerPoint up. Hello. It's actually really exciting to be here because we have been working on this project for almost a year now, 9 or 10 months. And our fieldwork students, our OT fieldwork students are arriving next week, so we will now have the capacity to provide a lot more services, which means we're here to tell you what we're here to provide. So what is the Goal Square program? It's an initiative led by the OT program here on campus that is leveraging faculty and students' time to help us better serve students with disabilities who are attending the university here. So we're talking about all the students who have a diagnosis, either as a disability or a mental health diagnosis, that might be impacting how they're able to access both their learning and living environments. So these students are students who have a normal or above normal IQ usually, and that have come to campus of their own merits. They're not students who are here with any special accommodations when they arrive. And as you see on the slides, we're talking both about the learning and the living environment. So many of the young people that we've met so far have questions about using the cafeteria or interacting with peers in the dorm. So it's sort of a combination of both. So why is this need there? And I had to kind of put this slide together this morning because I was trying to find a way to explain why this was felt to be needed. So in the way that the assistance services are provided in the US, as kids grow up in public schools, there's sort of three levels of services, right? All the students get regular education, and then the students that have a disability that doesn't affect their ability to learn so much get an accommodation plan, which we call in public school a 504 plan. And then there are some students who get special education. And those can be students with learning disabilities or ADHD or autism and a variety of things. When we get to university, that system doesn't work in the same way, right? So we have regular education, we have courses and programs and that we all do. We have accommodations through the accessibility office, but there is not really a place where students who have that little added need get services. And that's not only true at this university, it's true across the whole country. We have the Academic Success Center, which is wonderful because they are providing services sort of across the board. And they're amazing specialists in reading and writing and math, and they have a lot of people involved with them. But they're not necessarily specialists at working with kids who have disabilities and more complex disabilities, and how to tweak the learning and how we do things to support those students. So this all began because last year I became aware of the fact that there was 100 students being served by accessibility services. And of those students, there were a handful of students who had that higher level of needs. And so I began by serving as a consultant for accessibility services and trying to help Zoe with those students who she felt needed more than what that office could provide. From that early conversation, we realized that the need was much bigger than what I could provide as a service to the university, and we decided to leverage OT faculty and students to help us do this. So this is what the program is offering now.
So I'll talk a little bit about this because I will be actually serving as the fieldwork supervisor for our OT students who are in their third year and finishing up their final bit of coursework and clinical placements. And so what we will be doing part of this program is we do an evaluation. We will do one-on-one consulting with the students, and we'll also be doing group sessions. And in the individual sessions, it's all student run in terms of the person who's coming to us asking for the help. It's their goals. We brainstorm ideas with them. They get to choose what they try, come back and report. It's pretty much empowering them to kind of choose their own adventure with our support to help them put them on the right path. So it's really empowering and really great. Not someone else coming in and telling this is what you need to do. The group sessions will be running during the free period on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And that'll be run by our OT students. We're doing one on some study smart skills and then another one on tech. we call it Tech Hour, and different technologies that are out there to support people's learning, things like text-to-speech and other kinds of technologies that we can teach them to use and they can share amongst each other to help support them so they can learn in all the various ways that they learn best. So you can see all the different areas of focus there, ranging from reading alternatives to disability-specific study time management skills to our special techniques depending on what you have going on, organization skills, even navigating group projects and interacting with faculty and peers. If you have autism, it's kind of be a little scary to come up maybe to your faculty member and try to ask for something. So helping them navigate these environments and hopefully actually preparing them better for the workplace. And as Marie was mentioning, we get a lot of questions even about res life and navigating just the cafeteria downstairs. And all those little pieces make a huge difference for keeping someone successful in here at the university in the end.
So in essence, as we're sort of thinking that we're trying to sort of fill the little hole, or we're like the third leg to this tool of services that we're providing between the accessibility services, the Academic Success Center, and us. And we are collaborating amongst the three of us to make sure that we don't duplicate services, but we are actually targeting the students' needs. We also will be offering services to faculty. And as much as we have time. And so if there is a course that you're teaching and you have group projects and you have students in your courses that tend to have communication challenges, that makes it hard for them to participate in group projects in class, and you believe that they might have disability, you can contact us and we can try to help you find solutions and ways to get those students to participate better in those group projects. There are things that we can do as faculty members to support those students more effectively. Similarly, we're willing to help create some increased awareness about disabilities on campus and provide some training. And so if there are some trainings that are needed, I know that Jeff has organized some trainings around autism with the folks at Penn Charter, which is wonderful. But we can also help organize and provide some of those trainings, again, leveraging our students. And finally, there are a number of things that we can do in designing courses to make them more universally accessible. You know, so build in not only textbooks, and with e-textbooks, that's wonderful because they're easy to convert to audio, but preparing alternative, you know, having built-in alternatives to reading text so that the students who are slow learners, they have access to audiobooks and like finding those strategies for them. So that falls under that UDL category, and I know that Sherry, and I saw Sherry earlier, is a big proponent of UDL, and we are here to help as kind of this sounding board for faculty who want to figure out what are some of the easy ways that I can make my course more universally designed for our students. This will help decrease the amount of students who have to seek services individually from all of the other supports, and we were just hearing from Megan that there's a lot of students need this year. So who's doing this and how are we getting this done? So for the moment, we're piloting this year. So it's Monique and I, two OT faculty, in our research and clinical time. And then we have two graduate OT students doing their final clinical rotations with us, both in the fall and spring. We are hoping that this is going to work wonderfully well and that we can expand. There's already been conversations as the Center City campus is now interested and our OT colleagues there would like to expand this, but we wanted to start small, although it doesn't feel so small anymore, does it? We wanted to start small and provide services here first. Also, as we're expanding, there are many other professions and disciplines that could provide services and help in this endeavor, so we could expand to, you know, counseling, psychology. There's a lot of students with anxiety on campus that's making it difficult for them to even access their learning. And so we could leverage a lot more resources over time. Again, we're starting small. In my grand vision, because I believe this program is unique. There are some programs across the country specifically for students with autism, but program for students with disabilities in university in this fashion, I don't believe that exists. And so I'm hoping that we can prove that this is working and it's working well, and then we can actually, I'm sure the business people will say sell. My humanistic brain says, you know, share this project with the rest of the country and really make this work more globally, but I might be convincible to sell it. I have Beth right here giving me a look. And so funding. We applied for a Nexus grant last year, and so we got some funding through the Nexus grant because we're making this a learning opportunity for our students as well. Beyond that, it is really just in-kind contributions of time from Monique and I for the OT program, and then a lot of graduate students' help. We have graduate students as clinicians. We have graduate students who develop the course, the program in their course. We have the OT field students who will be helping us implement it. One of my doctoral students is developing the program evaluation so we can show the provost's office that we have a value to the university. And so without all the students, this would not be possible at all. How do you refer to us? So this is the students can self-refer, and so they can come to us. So we've been, for the moment, really mostly reaching out to them through email and through the accessibility office. You guys can refer some students to us, which is why I wanted to tell you about this services. If there's a student in your class that you think might benefit from this, you can send them our way. And Monique has some flyers here. And then Zoe and Megan as well can refer to us. And the flyer is on the Accessibility Services website. Did I forget something?
Just to make it clear that how we're contacting them now is that when they came to pick up their letters of accommodation from Zoe down in Accessibility Services, we had a questionnaire that they filled out. It's basically a screening tool. And as we went through, we were kind of picking out themes and things that we knew we could help with and sending out invitations to those students specifically. And then Zoe's been kind of comparing the list with who's been coming in already. People that she knows are already starting to struggle. And so those people, most specifically, maybe one person was already on our high needs list, and then we made sure we reached out to the other people that the screening tool didn't quite pick up on. So there has been a system to it.
And so the only other thing that I thought, would it be helpful if I gave some examples of the kind of things that we've seen or that we can do? Yeah. So there's a student who was having some difficulty planning project time, but it wasn't a time management issue per se, it was an anxiety-based issue. And so we worked all over the summer. He actually came before the semester started because he knew that this was going to be a really tough school year for him. And he had some, you know, when his anxiety goes up, then he has physical symptoms of fibromyalgia kicking in, which made the spring semester very difficult. So we worked all summer long on developing strategies for him to not be in that position and helping him figure out what gets him there. That's also been something that we've addressed with some of our graduate students in the OT program. We have one young man who changed campus. His dorm changed, and so the cafeteria that he had access to changed. He has autism, and he couldn't figure out how to use Common Tread on his own. And so that was his primary question for me when he came with his learning goal was, I'm tired of eating pizza. And I was like, okay, let's work on that. You know, tell me what's going on, and we worked on that. We have a lot of students who struggle with the amount of reading that they have to do. They're slow readers, and so then they don't read, and then they have to somehow make it through and pass exams with just what they get in class. And that doesn't always work as the reading load works, so we have strategies for converting text to audio and things of the sort. So some of the students that we've seen.
So the one person I'm working with right now has OCD, and she begins to have obsessions about thinking she hit someone while driving, and then that actually stays with her till the next morning or until someone who's close to her can actually just dispel the obsession. But of course, she's so obsessed with that thought that she can't study, and it's affecting her ability to learn, and she's a very bright student. It's not that she doesn't know the concept. She just gets so worried about thinking that she hit somebody, so we've been working on how to break that cycle so she can actually sit down and study and learn the way she needs to and not have to worry about that specific obsession.
All right. Do you guys have any questions for us? Yes.
Can you just clarify how the faculty should not say something to a student, but if the student self-discloses to them that they're struggling and they need help?
Oh, well, about diagnosis, but I think would have, so the question is, well, I'm going to give Megan the microphone.
I just asked her to clarify how a faculty or someone like myself would approach a student about utilizing these services if the student did not self-disclose that they are either A, registered with the Office of Student Accessibility, or B, they did not provide you with documentation, because there is a fine line with, you know, what is legal and disclosing, you know, where the student is.
If you ever contacted us, you can't give us a student's name. So in terms of the consultation with faculty, it would be around what you want to work on and improve for your classroom. In terms of sharing the flyer with students, I would assume faculty would be able to do that if they wanted to, as long as it, because it could be shared with any students in the classroom. So it could be a resource available for any student. I'm assuming that that would be fine. We're not talking about you guys diagnosing students or even telling them that they, you know, that they may have a diagnosis. We won't be diagnosing students either. It's about offering them a resource if you feel like they might benefit from the resource. We're guessing that most of the students are going to be coming through us through Megan and Zoe's office, but we wanted you guys to know that this existed. If there were some students that you felt might benefit, it might be, you know, this in the same way that, but you may also want help for yourself in terms of prepping your courses. Does that?
So if a student has given me an accommodation note, it's highly likely that you've also contacted them. But if I start to see them struggling because they've given me an accommodation note, I can address it differently than someone who hasn't. Is that true?
So the question is about if a student has an accommodation letter already. It is likely that we've screened them. But because this is a student-driven process, they may not have chosen to complete the questionnaire. They may not have responded to us even if we found a need. And the students may not have necessarily identified a need until they came to your class. So I would not necessarily assume that we have contacted them or that they are working with us to begin with. In terms of the legalities of you, I think it would be fine to share with students that there's a resource on campus, but do we have to walk a fine line in terms of disclosing students' conditions to others?
All right, we have a question back here.
Frank B. from Graphic Design. So first of all, I applaud you for bringing this to our attention, because I was not aware of it at all. Second, I would recommend or hope that maybe there would be workshops, maybe voluntary workshops for faculty, in terms of how are we supposed to deal with the students that we see in our classroom. From personal experience, I just had a student up until yesterday when he decided to drop to switch to another major. So we're like 4 weeks into class, and it was pretty clear something was up with him, if you will, but I'm not a social worker, so I have no way of knowing or diagnosing what his issues might have been. It was really interesting to have him in class. I think that when he did participate, the other students in the classroom were very patient to let him have the time he needed to express himself. Only in talking to his advisor recently did anybody officially tell me that he was autistic and on the spectrum. I did get an email from someone named Zoe, who I don't even know who it is, who said something about taking a test, needing special accommodations. But, and this goes back to Megan, I'm not sure if we're allowed to know. And then, again, I'm not a social worker, so I have no idea how to even diagnose this person. So I think workshops for what faculty can and can't do and what would probably help.
So Zoe Ingold is the director of the Accessibility Services Office, and Accessibility Services provides a range of services, and I believe she presented here at the last faculty meeting. But there is a range of services that she's providing that meets the federal requirements for accessibility for students. On that slide, You know, that's, you know, and so things like time for exam and those kind of things are provided through our office. The students like the one that you're describing are the students exactly that in not only at this university, but across the country, we don't have a system in place to provide services, and that's the gap that we're trying to fill. And I know that Zoe has a process by which she uses to communicate with faculty members. And so I'm hoping that she shared that when she was here the last time. When we talk about workshops, we are going to do some workshops, and Jeff is organizing some workshops already specifically around autism, and those, I'm hoping you're going to give the dates again.
I will. Is this on? Okay. Jeff Ashley, Director of the Center for Teaching Innovation, Nexus Learning. And people, have you been deleting my emails? Seriously, come on. We saw them. They go where? So we, as faculty members and administrators, recognized this need last year and even before that, that the numbers are increasing nationally, right? Of students coming to us with cognitive challenges. And from my perspective in the center, we want to help faculty members develop those tools, not to diagnose Frank, but to facilitate a better learning environment for all students, including these students with these challenges. So we're starting this afternoon. Many of you actually emailed me back saying, not a good time, or I will be there. Not a good time, there's no good time, right? So we're going to be low-tech recording this, and I'm going to be placing them somewhere. Kristen Tran is a learning specialist from Penn Charter. I went to one of her sessions last year and was blown away and rethought the way that I acted towards many of my students who I thought were lazy or were not getting it. Developing this notion that there's a backstory that we don't know. We don't have to diagnose it, but we have to be cognizant it's there. So a trio of these lectures. It starts this afternoon at 3:30 to 4:30 in the library instruction space. Come, I don't care if you RSVP'd or not. And we're going to have these on a monthly basis. So we're starting high level on executive function. That's using the frontal lobe here for higher order thinking skills. And some people get it and some people don't. And then we're going to look at autism spectrum disorder and also attention deficit in subsequent workshops. All will be recorded, so look for an email from me, another email, saying where you can actually look at these recordings. Did that help, Frank? Another email?
And to your point, I think, I mean, now that you know that we're here, and we really didn't have the capacity until next week to provide, you know, services to faculty, but it would be fine to contact us and to have a consultation and have a brainstorming around how do I help students with these symptoms and, you know, or with these behaviors in my classroom. As long as we don't talk about any student specifically, there's no name exchange, we can generally help with just, you know, I observe this. What can I do in the classroom to help this student? And so that's the level of faculty consultation that we're talking about right now.
Catherine Jones-Sichlar. This is great. Can we ask that athletic coaches be included in the what you were talking about, Megan, about the importance of not naming, not telling a student that there's a possibility that the student may have some kind of learning disability. I had an athletic coach who said something to one of my students that was very, very upsetting, and clearly this person didn't understand how to talk to students about how they were doing in the classroom, and it was a really terrible situation, and I think it would have been averted if there was more training for them as well as us in terms of how to talk to students about their academic performance in a way that wasn't diagnosing them.
And for clarity purposes, occupational therapists do not provide diagnosis either. So we'll look at behaviors and symptoms and what's going on in the student's life and what they want to work on. So it's a conversation. If they disclose a diagnosis, you know, we have that information. If they don't disclose it, we'll just go with the symptoms that they have, and we'll help them to assess, we assess their functioning with them, and then use that information. The label isn't necessarily important to our work.
This is Susan Frostin, I'm one of the associate provosts. I think that this is really wonderful, and, you know, fills in a obviously a gap and supports our students. I do have some questions about how this gets communicated relative to services from the Academic Success Center and from Accessibility Services and how that gets coordinated. We don't have to solve it here. But like, for example, if faculty are now sharing this flyer with all their students, there's now an overlapping, right, the Study Smarts Thursday, right, which gets into study skills and time management skills that now overlaps with something that comes out of the Academic Success Center. So I'm just thinking about like the coordination of this amongst the support services. So I just want to put that out there, you know, so that there's just sort of a coordinated effort.
And we are coordinating. The effort, the whole process was built through Zoe's office. So Zoe was part of the process from the beginning. And Zoe was our conduit to Megan until recently. And we will continue to coordinate for sure. We also will not be providing some of these workshops, although the labels are similar, the content is going to be very disability specific, and so the overlap may not be as great as it might appear to you when you look at the sheet.
You have students not understanding that. It's not a bad thing.
Other questions or thoughts? Thank you so much for your time and listening.
Okay, we had no unfinished business from the last meeting. I was not informed of any new business I should be aware of. Announcements, Evan.
Hello, I'm very proud to say that the Spector Center is offering research fellowships. $5,000, we're offering two of them. All Inspector was involved in practically everything, so that covers almost every one of your specialties. It's obviously politics, political science, global politics, but he also was very involved in science. He was the leading proponent of federal funding for stem cell research. He was a leading proponent for funding for cancer research. So for you science folks, there's a lot of opportunity, as well as social science. This will be awarded through the Spector Center committee that will be looking over these. We really would love to have some in-house people. So if you're interested, please contact me. I sent email, but I think they go the same place that Jeff Ashley's emails go. So if you really need to have more information, just contact me. I'll send it to you again. The only proviso on all this is that you use as a primary source, of course not the only source, the Spector Collection, which, having used it myself in my book, has tremendous things in it from everything you can imagine. Anything that's happened, whether it's in the Middle East, Syria, Israel, Palestine, he's been involved. Cuba, he was there for really bringing forth relations before everyone else was. Of course, the Kennedy assassination, we can't forget about that. There's nothing you can't think of that's happened in the last 30 years that he wasn't involved in. I really love to be able to award it in-house, but if you have friends, colleagues who are looking at their master's papers, or PhDs, or postdocs, or just want to write journal articles, this is perfect. So please take advantage of this amazing opportunity. We have looked at other fellowships, and we're much higher than even the Kennedy Center as far as how much we're awarding. And while I have the mic, I just want to take advantage for 1 second. I was walking from the gym, and all those beautiful new Jefferson signs telling what specialties that we actually engage in this university. And as I was walking, I just missed one. There's nothing there on the liberal arts. There's nothing on humanities or social sciences. And I think a lot of the people in this room would really like a flag that would kind of acknowledge that we exist. So I just have the bike and you can't take it from me.
Here, here. Other announcements.
Hi everyone, Madeline Wilcox, Director of Study Away Programs. I sent out some emails that also went into the pit. But if you have students who are interested in studying away, we have applications opening for next summer, fall, and spring on October 1st. Deadlines will be in February and April. We have advising hours starting this week. Students need to come to an info session before they meet one-on-one with an advisor. So you can send your students to the Study Away office in Canbar 102 to schedule an appointment and pick up information, but please have them, you know, they'll be told to go to an info session first to get an overview, and short course applications are open for this spring break and summer.
Other announcements?
Hi, Mary Beth Cradle Whitefall, Graphic Design Communication. I wanted to let you all know that on Thursday in this room at 7 p.m., Graphic Design is hosting an event called Designer Activist Woman, and there will be a panel of four women speaking about their work in design and activism, and one of the women is coming all the way from the UK to talk to us.
Thank you. Other announcements? All right, well, this is proof that meetings go much better without upper administration. I could spend the next 50 minutes talking about my exciting life, or we could entertain a motion to adjourn. Message received. Second? All in favor? Thank you so much. We'll see you October 17th.